from Lansford to Bradford, Bloomsburg to Uniontown, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Karl Marx was a dark individual whose goal to destroy existing institutions through radical revolution is fueling some of the civil unrest in America today. Dr. Paul Kengor from Grove City College is author of the new book, The Devil and Karl Marx. He is here to discuss. Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful is working to clean up roadside trash and illegal dumping sites to preserve the natural beauty of our state. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Shannon Ryder of Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And the General Assembly passed a short-term budget back in June, but a budget for the balance of the year must be put into place by the end of November. Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania talks about it on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Paul Kengor in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Both the State House and State Senate passed bills that would allow local school districts the flexibility to determine how many spectators would be allowed at sporting and other events. The bill passed by margins greater than what would be required to override an expected veto by Governor Wolf. The governor did, in fact, veto the bill, but when the House took an override vote this past week, 25 Democrats who had voted for the bill flip-flopped and voted against the override. As a result, the arbitrary attendance limits put into place by the governor remain in effect, meaning many parents will be denied the opportunity to watch their children play fall sports. But the governor did suffer another setback at the hands of the federal court system this past week, as federal district judge William Stickman IV denied a request by the governor and Attorney General Josh Shapiro to stay his ruling that held the governor's draconian shutdown orders and gathering limits to be unconstitutional. Wolf is appealing the ruling and wanted his orders to remain in effect while the Third Circuit Court of Appeals considers the case. In another battle, Republican lawmakers are planning to file suit in federal court over a state Supreme Court ruling that mail-in ballots could be received and counted up to 3 days after the November 3rd general election. The court ruling goes against state law that requires mail-in ballots to be received no later than Election Day. The ruling poisoned the well for negotiations between the governor and legislative leaders for further election reforms, which now are unlikely to happen. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The philosophy and tactics of Karl Marx are behind some of the civil unrest that has taken place in recent months. Dr. Paul Kengor from the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College is author of the book The Devil and Karl Marx. Paul is heard regularly as a commentator on our sister radio program, American Radio Journal, and periodically on this show. He's here to talk about his book and the impact Karl Marx is having on our nation today. Paul, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Paul, in your new book, The Devil and Karl Marx, just in the foreword, as the book gets started, the comment is made that conservatives have blabbered themselves hoarse, denouncing the economic effects of socialism. They have ignored the deeper spiritual questions that actually move men's souls. Looking at Karl Marx and Marxism and the impact that it's having in America today, can you expound a bit upon that statement?
Yeah, sure thing, Loman. In fact, that foreword was written by Michael Knowles, and he made the comment that, you know, conservatives like to say things like, well, Marxism fails because it distorts markets, right? And they like to give these sort of tidy economic arguments, which are true, right? It really distorts markets. I mean, it's an absolute, it creates economic basket cases out of countries like Venezuela, where the oil is bubbling up out of the ground. Places like the Ukraine and the Soviet Union, where stuff just grows. Cuba, I mean, you can drop a seed in the soil in Cuba and have a mango tree up in a few months, but you can't even eat it because the state owns it. So, but beyond that, yeah, I mean, it's a spiritual problem. And Ronald Reagan said to the Irish National Parliament in 1984, he said, ultimately, this isn't a battle between rockets and economics. This is a spiritual battle. And Marx understood that. Engels understood it. Lenin understood it. Marx said, communism begins where atheism begins. Lenin said, all worship of a divinity is a necrophilia. There's nothing more abominable than religion. The Soviet Union launched this, not just totalitarian state, but this atheistic state. And frighteningly, kind of shockingly, there are suddenly now a lot of people in America, especially young people, that are praising Marxism by pretty high numbers. I go through the numbers in the book. And beyond that, the socialism, which according to Marxist-Leninist theory, is the final transitionary step to communism, you now have a majority of millennials say they prefer socialism over capitalism, and even many people that say they'd happily vote for a socialist for president of the United States. So it's I think we're at a pretty bad point, and that's one of the reasons why I felt this book needed to be published.
It is indeed a very timely book, Paul, because as we look at all the violence that has been sweeping the inner cities of our country, there's obviously a Marxist influence here. Do you think that the people who are engaged in these so-called protests that have actually become riots and lawlessness, do you think they really understand what Marxism, and more importantly, what Karl Marx himself was all about?
No, they don't, Loman. If they did, then they wouldn't believe in it. In fact, one of the points that Michael Knowles makes in the foreword, he quotes Ronald Reagan, who says that a communism is somebody who reads Marx, an anti-communist is someone who understands Marx, right? And I'd like to walk up to some of these people, especially, I mean, so many of the people, it's like BLM protests, are, you know, white college students, white graduate students, right? And often from wealthy families. And I like to go up to them and say, you know that the Communist Manifesto says the entire communist theory may be summed up in the single sentence, abolition of private property? You know that point three in Marx's 10-point plan calls for abolition of all right of inheritance? Do you know the Communist Manifesto speaks of, quote, abolition of the family, exclamation mark, even the most radical flare-up of this infamous proposal of a communist, unquote? I mean, Marx abolishes property, states, family, quote, all religion, all morality, unquote. If these people really knew what it was all about, as they sit there with all their property and their iPhones and their Starbucks and everything else, they wouldn't believe it. But they believe it because they have a completely wrong misconception of it. They think communism is about helping other people, sharing the wealth. If they only knew what it really was, I'm convinced they wouldn't be supporting it or at least praising it or finding complimentary things to say about it, even if they're not flat-out Marxists.
In terms of Marxism itself, they would take any type of social unrest, regardless of the reason behind it, and use it to advance their Marxist view of the world. So when we look at Black Lives Matter and obviously a very real concern that we eradicate racism from our society, is racism really the excuse more than a reason behind a lot of this, especially the extreme unrest?
I talk in the book about the Scottsboro Boys, which was a case in the 1930s where Communist Party USA hijacked what was genuinely a great racial injustice, Loman, where these African-American boys from the South were accused of rape. It wasn't true. And so Communist Party USA hijacked that case, and they used it to try to attract Black Americans and really progressives of all stripes. The NAACP in those days was outraged at what CPUSA was doing. So, yeah, there are communist groups, organizations that agitate according to race. One of them, probably the most infamous, is called REVCOM, Revolutionary Communist Party USA, which is run by Bob Avakian. And, yeah, the founders of BLM, notably Patrice Cullors and Alicia Garza, Patrice has said flat out, quote, we are trained Marxists. Alicia and I, we do have an ideological frame. We are super versed in ideological theories. That's our ideological frame, our ideological framework. And they even, at the What We Believe section of their website, which, as I speak to you, Loman, is being scrubbed right now. It has actually been removed in the last few days. But you know, people like myself have screenshots of it. There was a line there about how we and our fellow comrades, they use the word comrades twice, and our cisgender allies, our heteronormative friends, the wanting to declare war on what is heteronormative. They said, we seek to disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure, quote unquote. So there's a lot of that kind of language at the website because the founders, two of the three founders, as Patrice said, are trained Marxists. So it might not be a Marxist organization, and people in the street might not be waving the hammer and sickle, and a typical person with a BLM sign in their front yard probably doesn't have a bust of Karl Marx, you know, on the living room table. But the fact that the founders would point to that, and Patrice even says in her memoirs, which I have, she said, we spent a whole year reading Marx, Lenin, Mao. The fact that she's telling you that is telling you something important. We communists everywhere support every revolutionary movement that goes against the existing social and political order of things. Marx called for the ruthless criticism of everything that exists, quoting Goethe's Faust, the Mephistopheles, the demon devil character. He said, everything that exists deserves to perish. So Marx and Marxists have always been about tearing down.
We are talking with Dr. Paul Kengor from Grove City College, who is author of The Devil and Karl Marx. And speaking of all this tearing down, Paul, the words fundamentally transformed are used in your book. They're words that Barack Obama used upon his election as president, saying he wanted to fundamentally transform the country. And further, Marx and others have said that the change has to come through revolution. Is this fundamental transformation, in fact, underway?
Communism was all about fundamental transformation. I mean, it's all through the writings of Marx, and it's a totalitarian ideology. And by the way, in a previous book I did about 10 years ago, it was called The Communist, and it was on Obama's mentor, Frank Marshall Davis. And Davis was a literal card-carrying member of Communist Party USA. We put his number right in the front of the book. It's 47544. And in his very first piece that he wrote for the Chicago Star, which had a big red star on the front of it, it was the Chicago Communist newspaper that Davis was the founding editor-in-chief of. In his very first column, which ran in the July 4th, 1946 issue, he talked about fundamental transformation. So, and look, this is key for people to understand. It's why people like I winced when we heard Obama say that in 2008. If you really love America, if you really want to just change things, hope and change to make it better, well, you make changes. You fix the things that are wrong, but you don't fundamentally transform something that you love unless the thing is fundamentally rotten. And you know, communism was all about fundamentally transforming not just the system, but also human nature, which is why in The Devil and Karl Marx, I talk about how Marx went after religion. He said in his famous Opiate of the Masses essay, the criticism of religion is the beginning of all criticism.
Again, the book is The Devil and Karl Marx. We've been talking with its author, Dr. Paul Kengor from Grove City College. Paul, folks who are interested, where can they go to get a copy of The Devil and Karl Marx?
Just go to Amazon, amazon.com. And if you want to learn a little bit more about me, and in fact, we have some posts on this, including a short little video where I talk about this, go to our website, faithandfreedom.com, for the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College.
Dr. Paul Kengor, author of the book, The Devil and Karl Marx. Paul, as always, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Loman.
Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful is working to clean up litter and illegal dump sites along Pennsylvania roadways and parks. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Shannon Ryder, president of Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful, in this Community Benefit Spotlight.
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Shannon, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program.
Thank you so much for having me this morning, Joe.
Shannon, share with the listeners, if you will, what the inspiration was to start an organization in the name of Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful.
Our history goes back to the early 90s. And there was a woman in Hemphill Township, Westmoreland County, named Sue Wiseman. And she would travel the back roads riding her horses. And she would stumble across illegal dumping, construction, demolition waste, household trash. And she really wanted to clean it up. And what she found is that there were some barriers to getting that assistance, to getting those materials cleaned up, because she couldn't do it alone. And what she did is she contacted her township, she contacted some county officials, and she started doing cleanups. And she found folks to help her haul the trash to the state highways, and PennDOT then went ahead and helped clean up that trash. And really what happened is one person who wanted to make a difference in her community figured out how. And that organization that she started was actually called PA Cleanways. And when folks figured out that there was people like Sue, they realized there's probably other people in Westmoreland County that want to clean up these back roads. But there was no way to do it because state-maintained roads had that support through the Adopt-a-Highway program, but these more rural areas didn't. And that's where Sue made the difference.
I've traveled to Israel. I've traveled to Japan. Last week, I traveled down through Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Pennsylvania is just such a beautiful state in comparison, but the areas I just mentioned, you don't see a lot of trash typically along the roads. But in Pennsylvania, it seems like there's more of it. And so I'm glad that there's an organization like yours that addresses this. What are the guiding principles for your organization? How do you get your mission fulfilled?
How do we deliver our mission? We truly believe education's extremely important. So we talk about the importance of not just education in our schools, but education for consumers. We believe that it's really important to promote individual responsibility, but also corporate responsibility. It is a shared responsibility for keeping our communities clean. It's not up to one or the other, it's shared. Public-private partnerships are absolutely critical. We could not do what we do without businesses that support us, without municipalities that participate. And the bedrock to everything we do is our volunteers.
It's got to be almost overwhelming when you look at the number of roads and the amount of mileage in Pennsylvania to keep the roads clean. And I know that your work isn't restricted just Westmoreland County, that there are other areas of the state. How do you deal with the volume of what needs to be done?
PA Cleanways and Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful merged back in 2009. And so now we are Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful. We're the state affiliate of Keep America Beautiful, and we have over 30 local affiliates across the state, but we have hundreds of partners. We have boots on the ground in every county, and they're doing everything from streamside cleanups, roadside cleanups, to special collections for things like tires, electronics. They're doing tree plantings. Really, we're a community improvement organization, not just cleanups.
Do we have an understanding of why people dump their trash? Why don't they just go home and put it in the can?
I don't know where you live, but I know I live in a suburban community where a waste hauler comes on Wednesday morning and they take my trash and my recycling, and I don't have to think about it. And I can pretty much put anything out at the curb. And frankly, that's how I grew up. So it wasn't until I started working at PA Cleanways in 2004 that I understood that not everybody has what is called curbside access. And that access to convenient and affordable trash disposal and recycling is the key indicator for illegal dumping. Do folks have access, convenient, affordable access to get rid of trash? And in rural Pennsylvania, a lot of folks don't.
That's interesting. This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Shannon Ryder, president of Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful. Shannon, how do we compare with other states? Do you have any metrics that addresses, is it worse here or better than other places?
What I can definitely say is that because of Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful's commitment to this issue, we have a lot of data on illegal dumping and littering. We probably have more data on these issues than other states. And so while I can say through our research we have identified over 6,000 illegal dump sites in Pennsylvania and that we have documented over 500 million pieces of litter on Pennsylvania roadways, other states don't have that data. So while intuitively that sounds like, oh, Pennsylvania's worse than other states, and quantitatively, right from a subjective point of view, oh, we're worse than Virginia, we're worse than Maryland, we have the data, we understand the issue, and so we can address these issues. I don't think a lot of other states have the same level of data that we do.
You need volunteers to do the work of your organization. Is it difficult to recruit volunteers? And what kind of loyalty do you have in your volunteers once they get started?
We have amazing volunteers all across the state. We engage in, we probably have around 7,000 community engagement events every year, and specifically over 130,000 volunteers annually. We do know a lot of those are reoccurring groups, those volunteers that are registering their event. A lot of them have been doing these events in their community for years. Our goal is to build community stewards. Our goal is to put ourselves out of work, right? If you build that stewardship at the local level, there's no need for Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful because that's what everybody's doing.
You talked about education as one of the guiding principles to fulfill your mission. How do you deliver the education and where can people find it?
We have a host of educational tools on our website, keeppabeautiful.org, under Prevent It and Keep It. So that's kind of how our programs are organized. But we have a host of educational tools called Open Your Eyes to Litter, which are specific to school-aged groups. We also have fact sheets and things on litter and illegal dumping when we're talking about policy, public officials, so we have resources for them as well. We also have education, we have specific curriculum for schools, and we also have a host of enforcement education tools. So to train local enforcement on some of these issues, as well as how to work with enforcement agencies. What are the laws, the different statutes, and things like that.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Shannon Ryder, president of Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful. Shannon, thank you for being a guest on the program.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Back to you, Loman.
Pennsylvania lawmakers must return after the election to put into place a budget for the balance of the fiscal year with some guiding principles for handling what appears to be a massive budget deficit. We turn to Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania with this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
This week, we turn the calendar to October, which means we're just a month away from the next short-term budget being due. In May, the legislature passed a short-term budget that would flat fund the government through November. Many members from both parties in chambers cited their support for the short-term plan as being based in necessity due to the uncertainty of revenue collections throughout the period of business shutdowns and high unemployment across the Commonwealth. In the short-term budget, while there were no tax increases, there were also no spending cuts. The reality of our fiscal condition is that July started with a $3.2 billion shortfall. What Harrisburg must begin to examine, and in very short order, is what can be cut and from where. Every Pennsylvanian has been forced to make tough decisions throughout the pandemic. Why shouldn't the men and women representing our interest in Harrisburg have to do the same? Over the coming weeks, we're going to be presenting our Taxpayer Protection Pledge to members of the General Assembly. We'll be shining a light on the members who sign the pledge to ensure their attention is paid to three general principles. First, no bailouts. All of the decisions that have contributed to Pennsylvania's budget troubles were made by state lawmakers, not the federal government. Likewise, it's the Commonwealth's lawmakers who must realign spending with expected state revenues, not rely on proposed federal bailouts paid for by taxpayers who had nothing to do with creating PA's fiscal problems. Second, no new taxes or tax increases. PA was hardly a model of fiscal restraint in the years leading up to the COVID-19 pandemic. Data from the Commonwealth Foundation shows that between fiscal year 2000 and 2001 and fiscal year 2019 to 2020, state spending increased 51% faster than the rate of inflation, while the Commonwealth's population grew by just 4% and unemployment expanded by only 6%. State taxpayers are already overburdened under the Commonwealth's current tax code, and they should not be punished for poor previous decisions that created the conditions that have been exacerbated by the pandemic. And third, No playing favorites. Every state government and agency must be fair game for spending adjustments. In May 2020, Americans for Prosperity identified numerous program and policy changes that would save our taxpayers billions of dollars each year, including elimination of more than $729 million in annual corporate welfare payments that benefit favored private businesses at the expense of taxpayers. There is ample opportunity for PA lawmakers to solve the state's fiscal challenges without new or increased taxes. And as we consider revenue losses and how we can accelerate PA's economic recovery, we must have the courage to consider bold, transformative policies like comprehensive tax reform. This was the subject of our recent PA Leadership Conference panel, and we will continue to drive the need for bold policy change that will fast-track recovery by making our state more competitive, attracting new families and businesses to join the ranks of Pennsylvanians working hard to reach their full potential. Let's finally eliminate tax credits and lower our corporate tax rate, an idea many in the General Assembly and the governor has endorsed. More than ever, these audacious changes warrant deliberation. I want to end with what now Majority Leader Benninghoff shared with me. With Pennsylvania suffering from a historic budget shortfall because of Governor Wolf's far-reaching and devastating economic shutdown, we must look at all solutions to balance the budget without raising taxes. One area of focus must be an overhaul of our state's tax structure. 2 years ago, I had a report commissioned from the Tax Foundation to look at our overall tax structure. The recommendations from that report were clear. Our current tax structure is outdated, complex, cumbersome, and less than competitive in the global marketplace. The only way to permanently solve the problems facing PA is to grow our economy. To do that, we need a modern, responsive tax structure that is reliable and predictable, benefits the working people, and is welcoming to employers and new investment. For more information, please remember to find and like us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP, and find and follow us on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WERG-FM at Gannon University in Erie, WZSKAM in Everett, and 5DRadio.com in Fraser, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.